Okay, my name is Ronald Grant Douglas, and in the Ojibwe language, because I'm American Indian, I was given the name of Machika, which is mud turtle.
And I am Darwin Douglas Bostwick. It is November 22nd, 23rd, sorry, and it is 2018, and it is a Friday afternoon, Black Friday, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So, when were you born?
I was born December 16th, 1941, 9 days after Pearl Harbor.
Oh, wow. Wow. And so, what are some of the jobs you've done?
Well, I've been an attorney. I've been a real estate. I had my own real estate brokerage firm. I've been a college professor at community college. I've been a trial court judge. I've been an appellate court justice. These are for Indian courts.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I had my own real estate brokerage. I ran a TV and hi-fi repair shop for 20 years. And then I went back to school to get my law degree. And I also have been the chairperson or the director for the Genesee County Small Business Program that they had. And I was that for a year until the Michigan dropped all the funding.
Wow, that sounds like a life full of stories. And what would you say is your favorite one, or the one you probably missed the most?
Would you believe I forgot about one I got when I was 11 years old? I pushed an ice cream cart.
I would like that job too. Because, I'd like that job today.
Yeah, because people would run out to talk to you, to say hello to you. And they were so happy because you brought them something they could enjoy. And of course, before that, nobody would talk to me. They just, I had nothing to talk to people about.
Now, it's probably not like our traditional ice cream truck today. So, like, what did you have? You said it was
like
a little
cart with bells on it, and you walked up and down all the streets.
So let's get into one of our questions. So, what is the best memory you have of your childhood?
Best memory, actually, is 1946. The U.S. Air Force made a tribute to Flint for all the work they did to help in the war.
Wow!
And so, all my relatives showed up at our house, and we stood out in our front yard, and watched probably 100 airplanes flying right overhead, very low, and it was really exciting.
I guess what I'm gonna ask along with this is, have you seen a big difference in how we treat our military? Because, I've never seen anything like that today.
I don't think so, because, of course, I've never been in the military, so... because of my hearing loss when mm-hmm. I was 21 years old, they said, no, we don't want you. So I know I've got two brothers that have been in the military, and mm-hmm. they both were very happy.
Mm. Good. So how many siblings do you have?
Okay, I have one sister, and I did have five brothers, but the oldest one that was in the Air Force died.
Mm.
And so I only have four brothers and one sister now.
Mm. And going up with that, so who did you really grow up with, or did you have a sibling that you talked to the most?
Well, see, now my Nick's brother was only a year and 3 months older than me, and my sister was a year and 5 months older than him. So the three of us went everywhere together,
mm.
and to the park, to play, to school, and everything, and so we spent tremendous amount of time together.
Wow. So you say going to the parks, what games did you grow up playing with, or sports?
Okay, I'm left-handed, and nobody wanted me to play in the baseball because everybody had the left-handed mitts, and I couldn't wear a left-handed mitt and throw a ball, and I didn't have the ability, so I never have been involved in sports other than just we played some softball out in the street. But In my 11th grade of high school, I went out for doing the quarter mile runs, because then I didn't have to have coordination.
Yeah, you didn't know. No.
So I could do that.
I'm actually left-handed as well, but I play soccer, and I've had to adapt it to throwing with my right hand and like using both feet and stuff like that. Yeah. So I had to change, but I still write with my left. So that's funny. So that middle name, and now we have our left hand.
Oh, okay.
One thing I hate about being a left hand is whenever you'd write with the pencil, the lead would always get on your hand. Do you have that problem still?
Now, I want to tell you, when I was the director for the Small Business Center, I found out that the majority of business people who succeeded for at least 10 years had two things the same. They were the oldest child in their family, and they were left-handed.
Are you the oldest child?
No. Oh. That's why I gave up after 20 years. I'm the middle kid of seven.
Wow. I only have my sister. So, but we do have a lot of exchange students, so I count those as my brothers and sisters when we have those a year.
Yeah.
And so what was the toughest thing you faced while growing up? Was it being left-handed, or was it something else?
No, it was being unhappy, because all of the neighborhood kids would call us names and avoid us because we were half American Indian. My mother was full blood.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And so it was a very nasty thing that I never went in any of the kids. There was only one kid that their parents allowed us into their house. And they never asked me to join in anything. And the same thing in school. They all said, no, we don't want any more of them drunken Indians.
I'm so sorry.
And so I learned to put up with that.
Yeah, that's so sad. I've never had to deal with that. Like, most I get is that like redhead, so they think I'm like have no soul when I was a kid, so they would and now they've understand that that's not true, but when I was younger, kids didn't want to like hang out with the kid who had no soul. So this is a fun question. Who is your favorite president and why?
I think John F. Kennedy, because of the fact that he seemed so wanting to get things done, and he wanted to help the lower income people, and he just didn't seem to be so full of politics because of either Democrat or Republic. He seemed to be very independent, and that's what I liked about him, is he was very independent.
As George Washington would say, don't create political parties. And so, if you don't mind me asking, where were you the day he died? Or was assassinated, I should say.
I was at work downtown. We had our TV shop right down where Saginaw Street and Martin Luther King split, and I was there when he was shot.
Oh, wow.
And
you still remember that day pretty very well?
Yes.
Yeah. This is another fun question. So who is your favorite superhero?
I think it would have to be Superman, because there was no Batman, there was no Spider-Man, and nobody paid any attention to Robin Hood, but so I would say it would have to have been Superman.
And did you read comics when they came around a lot?
Or? Yes, in fact, that's partly how I learned how to read when I was 4 years old.
Wow.
I was reading comic books, and I can remember reading regular children's novels when I was 4 years old.
Wow. Do you have a favorite comic that you still maybe remember?
I think it was either Daffy Duck or Donald Duck, just characters like that.
What advice would you give to me? What advice would you give to me?
Okay, it would be the best thing ever happened to me that I recommend to everybody is that they join organizations and serve on their board so that they can help them help people, because I found that way you meet people who have talent and who are willing to share. And so that's what really made a difference for me, is that all these people I met, that then they wanted to help me because they knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it made a tremendous difference in my world. It's just like, I don't know if you'll believe it or not, but when we closed our business, I wanted to apply at what was then GMI for their recording studio. And so a guy named Hardy Mott wrote me a letter of reference.
Oh, wow.
And but they closed the studio down, so I went back to school. And when I applied for law school, I had this letters from, because of these were all volunteer things, from Congressman Kildee, from Senator Riegel, and from Myron Weingarten, who was one of the heads of the Republican Party in Michigan, and with a lady who had been appointed by President Carter to head the National Indian Education Program, and from our tribal chief. And all those people were because they knew me from the volunteer work.
Well.
And so you not only meet people that can help you, they can teach you.
Yes.
Although none of them gave me any money, though.
So what was like your favorite organization that you worked with then, or that you joined?
Well, it was the running the TV repair shop, because everybody who came in was upset or angry because they bought something and it quit working, it broke down, so they couldn't watch TV or they couldn't listen to their music. And I was able to fix it so that they then had their enjoyment back.
Yeah.
And so it was nice having being able to make people happy while they paid me.
Did you ever have somebody who was like absolutely like you were just like, were so surprised, they were so livid with, that came into your shop, like they were just like that you were really surprised with, that like they were so angry about it?
No, they weren't angry about it, just because they had, well, some of them had been angry because we did warranty work for the different manufacturers, and the, where they bought it at the store said, too bad, we aren't going to do anything, go here and they'll fix it. And but I've only can remember one person mad at me, maybe two, my entire life, even as an attorney.
Wow.
That's, and as a judge.
That's good. It's good. That's very good. So if you could, so what is one thing you want to see being changed in the world, or you want to have changed?
I'd like to see people getting back more to dealing with people personally rather than emailing and texting, because you don't get to see, because I belong to Toastmasters, which is a public speaking program, and part of their information was that only 35% of the message that you're trying to get across are from the words.
Wow.
The rest is from their expression, from their gestures, and it just, it's just, I would like to see that, because it's a shame that people don't talk to each other face to face.
As much, yeah, definitely. And I know that personally, because like we have family in Montana, and we try to see them, because as much as it's like it is useful having a phone call, it's a lot better to see that person in the flesh, and so you can talk to them.
Well, it's nice at least that they have the phones where you can call and you can see each other and talk to each other.
Yeah, definitely. I know that helps having exchange students across the world.
Yeah.
So, during your career as an attorney, what was like the toughest case you dealt with?
I'm sorry, what were the, what changes?
No, what was the toughest case you dealt with as being an attorney?
I would say, well, the most dramatic was the fact as my position as the appellate justice for the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa's, they had somebody sue them for $10 million.
Wow.
And I had to make a decision and write it out and so that it would qualify and be final. And I ruled against it because of the fact that they were not recognizing the sovereign immunity mm-hmm. of the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they were working with it. So that one was tough. But another one was my very first case. I went in and my client was a member of the Hmong refugees that came here. And he did not speak a single word of English.
Oh my gosh.
He only spoke Chinese. And his family wanted me to represent him because he had paid money to rent a house. And the people said, changed their mind, said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to give you the money back. Wow. Just go away.
Wow.
And so,
it's terrible.
And of course, I couldn't find any court interpreters. So anyways, I finally got one of his friends to be the interpreter and won the case.
Good job. Wow. Your first one.
Very first one. And but the the one that memorable is that one with the $10 million.
So I want to be an attorney myself, and I want to get into becoming a lawyer. I want to work in third world countries. And so what is advice you'd give me as like a new and upcoming attorney?
Okay. It would be figure out what people you would like to work with, because I knew generally I could work with two groups of people. The very, very poor people with, I had many clients who couldn't even read and write.
Wow.
And also the very top of the social group, the very wealthy business people. And so I was very busy because I got along with both of those groups. The wealthy ones paid my overhead, and the poor ones made my satisfaction.
Yes.
That's the thing, is that you have to decide who you're going to work with so you know what type of law area you're interested in, because I did a lot of estate planning and real estate, and didn't get into the criminal law. But again, though, by having all those references,
mm-hmm.
then I had been given an acceptance at Harvard.
Wow.
But I didn't want to move there and take our kids out of school mm-hmm. because we still had all four kids in school. And so I said, no, thank you. And they gave me an acceptance at U of M Law School when I was still only in my third year of college.
Wow.
And their rule was you had to be in the fourth.
Wow.
But because of all of those references, they said, hey, we're not going to turn this guy down.
No. Why would
you? So that's what I recommend, is that you get involved with these organizations that help people, because they were all very happy to give me references.
Yeah. And like colleges will give you money if you're like getting out there, like you're doing good.
Yeah.
So what is one thing you'd want to say to your teenage self?
One thing I want to basically what?
Say to your teenage self, like your young self.
Well, I think I should have figured out some way to talk to people more
mm-hmm.
because of the fact that I had almost no social skills. I can remember being in 10th grade, and I asked somebody to do something for me, and he said, okay, here you go. And then he looked at me and said, well, I said, "What's wrong?" And he says, "Well, aren't you going to say thank you?"
Oh, wow.
I had never once, growing up to that age, ever had anybody tell me thank you or I'm sorry. I didn't have any of those social skills.
Wow.
So, you know, that's something I would change, is try to get involved more with the social skills.
Yes.
But I never heard a word thank you.
So that kind of answers a couple questions I had. So did you ever have a mentor in your life?
It's my oldest brother. He was extremely intelligent and very ambitious. He helped me figure out how to get a newspaper route when I was 8 years old, and he helped me get into the, I had to go to night school to learn how to do TV repair work. And so he motivated me to get into that, so that then 3 days after I graduated from high school, I started working doing TV repair work. He also, though, just taught me things to help people, to be involved, and that was very nice. In fact, I'm very proud that he actually had his own organization. He had this IQ, I think, of 135 or something like that, and he had both he had been in the Air Force and taught judo, and he just worked so hard that he gave me the example and he took me with him places.
That's so nice.
So.
That's just amazing. I would enjoy to meet him too. Like, he sounds like a great person.
Yeah, unfortunately, they had him teaching desert survival in the Air Force in New Mexico in the 50s. And they were just a few miles downwind from where they were setting off the atomic bombs.
Oh my gosh.
And so 20 years later then, he died of something called oat cell cancer when he was 44 years old.
Oh, wow.
And they told me you only get it two ways. One is if you're in your 90s, and the other is if you've been exposed to massive amounts of radiation. And the Air Force finally admitted that all of these guys died of cancer, that it was related to them having them there while they set off the atomic bombs.
Wow.
So he only made it to 44, same with my dad. My dad died at 44. He died 6 weeks before I graduated from high school.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Did he fight in World War II?
No, just my mother. My dad's family, his father, in the other room there, I have a sword with everything that his father used when he was in the Civil War.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
His father was 72 years old when my dad was born. So I can trace back just two generations all the way back to 1842.
Wow.
But he was a Scotch. The Douglas name went all the way back. My sister traced it all the way back to about the year 1000.
Wow.
In Scotland. They had the same name. Once in a while, there'd be two S's, and then their kids would be with one S, and then a grandkid down from that would be with two S's, because people couldn't spell.
Yes.
They couldn't read, so they didn't know. So, but this, I've got a picture of one of his ancestors from the 1700s, and my granddaughter swears it's a picture of me because the family resemblance is identical.
Wow.
Whoops, just a second. Unfortunately, these batteries don't last forever. No, unfortunately, I lost all my hearing in my right ear when I was 27 years old because they were going to fix it. And instead, they screwed up and completely destroyed it all.
Oh, wow.
But what's amazing, though, is that U of M Ann Arbor's hearing clinic and CMU's hearing clinic both told me their number one patient, more than white people, are American Indians.
Oh, wow.
They have the hearing loss, so unfortunately I inherited that trait.
It's still good, though. You can still hear some things, too. That's good. So I'm going to ask you a question, because I'm, looking at this photo of you and your wife.
Yeah, we were 18 years old there when we got married.
How did you meet her?
Would you believe I married my boss's daughter?
How did your boss feel about it?
Well, they had warned her when we first met. We got this guy working for us, and he's kind of rough, because I had to go around on a motor scooter, so I had to wear a leather jacket, and of course, I had no social skills to talk to people at that time. But that was too much of a temptation when she finally got a chance to meet me, when she came into the store. So we met there at the store and then got married a year later.
Wow. So do you think modern day couples, do you think they, a coincidence like that, happens more often, or do you think it's kind of online too much also?
No, I've met a lot of people young who have very good marriages. But what's ironic, when I did do the divorce work or child custody and that sort of thing, I found that the biggest problem with marriage came up after the kids graduated from high school. And so they didn't have to worry about the kids, so they had nothing to talk to each other about anymore.
Oh.
And so that's when they would split up, is because they had been so busy taking care of the kids that otherwise they had to face each other after the kids were gone, and they had nothing to talk about.
Oh. Hmm.
That, and I found that a lot of the people that worked for General Motors that had a lot of overtime then again never spoke to each other because they were too busy working. They'd get home late at night and go right to bed, and so they didn't get along that way. But it was not my favorite type of work.
No, it's definitely not. So have you lived in Flint your entire life?
Well, all but 2 years, or a year and a half, we moved to Wisconsin because when I graduated from law school, I had a fellowship where they paid my salary for me to go to the Indian Legal Services in Wausau.
Huh.
So we were there almost 2 years, and then in 1998, after my mother died, we had been taking care of her and watching out for her and everything, and she died. And that afternoon, the morning she died, but in that afternoon, the tribe called me and asked if they had selected my name as their trial court judge.
Oh.
And asked if I would accept it. So I said, hey, I don't have to worry about my mother anymore. So we moved up to Mount Pleasant. We were there until 2013, so 15 years we lived up there. But we came down here constantly because all four of our kids were living in this area.
Mm-hmm.
All but those 17 years, then we lived in Flint. I grew up, till we got married, lived over by Mott Park, and then we moved to the north end of Flint. But I have to tell you, I am a troublemaker, though. Because we were one of the very, very strong influences that got Flint to pass the very first law about you could not have discrimination for housing. Because up until 1962, if anybody found out my mother was American Indian, the people who built the house could take it back, even though she paid for it.
Oh my gosh.
Because if you were Indian, black, or
Hispanic.
Jewish or Hispanic, then there was a deed restriction on every house.
Yes.
So we got involved and joined with NAACP, and we were a very strong influence because we got other white people to come in and join with the picketing and everything. And so a month later, Flint passed the very first anti-discrimination law in the country. And it got so much attention, and so many other cities said, hey, we want to copy what you're doing, that then Congress passed the 1964 Civil Rights Act, based on what had happened here in Flint.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Domino effect.
Yeah. So I was very happy because before we joined them, we saw them picketing and people would just honk their horn and go ignore them and go by.
Wow.
And, but like I say, within just 3 months after we got everybody to join, then Flint said yes. So I'm very proud of that.
So did you ever lose a case because of you being, American Indian, I should say? Well, American, but then having Chippewa blood. Did you ever have a judge who just was not going to go for you because he was racist?
Well, I, of course, as a trial court judge, all my clients were Indian, but the federal law, you could only send them to jail for 1 year if it was major crime, then they had to go to federal court.
Wow.
Because they would not authorize Indians to hear cases. And I had a few Indians who were civil matters where I represented them here in Genesee County. Like one of all things, they were fighting over the fact that their daughter had died and somebody took over the umbilical cord. And the tradition is the grandparents have that umbilical cord and would plant it next to a tree. And I won that case.
Huh.
And so that one was very, very much based on Indian culture.
Now, when you were doing these Indian cases and stuff, did you have more pride flowing through you when you were doing it? And like when you won the case, you had you were more satisfied with yourself, or when we were helping the poor people?
Because as I said, one of my uncles told me when I was a kid about the farmer next door came over and asked him to help them cut down trees and sell them to this lumber yard, and if he would do it, they would let him have all of the dead wood laying on the ground. And when he went to get the dead wood afterwards, they had him arrested for stealing.
Wow.
And then one of my other relatives, I had heard the story where he had a house down south of Detroit, and somebody came to his door in a minister's outfit in the wintertime and said, hey, we understand you don't have any money, so we're going to give you these food and things, but you got to sign this receipt. And they handed him a deed.
Oh, wow.
And so 3 months later, they then came in with the police and kicked him out. And I had so many things about, I heard where like one of my aunts was my mother's oldest sister. She was 15 years older than her. And the police came to their door, dragged her away from their home in St. Charles, and put her in this Indian boarding school in Mount Pleasant, where they had to work to do farming, and they were put in solitary confinement if they spoke one word of the American Indian language.
Oh my gosh.
And so I heard all these stories going up, and so I was very happy to be able to do something to turn that around and give people authority. In fact, I'm just here, one of the last things I did was I got very close with the Michigan Supreme Court justices and finally persuaded them, because for the 150 years that Michigan had been a state, they would not recognize an Indian judgment. They would recognize one from Ohio or Indiana, but if somebody filed a lawsuit in the tribal court and they didn't like it, then they could, even though they lost, they could still go to the Michigan courts to try to turn it around. And I got the Justice Kavanaugh to agree with me, and so he put it in front of the other justices, and they made it a law that now Michigan recognizes tribal court judgments as binding.
Good, good.
And so, like I say, I've just, you know, had so many things I've been involved in. I started our community college. I started our museum and cultural center. And again, because the people would work with me where they wouldn't work with strangers. You know, if somebody came in, I tried to get a lot of times people to work with people very highly qualified, but the tribal people just could not face working with white people.
Wow.
So they accepted me, even though I'm only half Native American, and I look just like my dad. And it made it nice, because with my reputation as an attorney, then they would take my advice and they would take my help, and it made a world of difference. Of course, the biggest difference, though, was I pushed Congressman Dale Kildee and to get try to push in to get a law passed called the Indian Gaming Act that authorized the tribal casinos.
Yeah, wow.
And so at that point, then they started their own police program, police force. They started their own college. They started their own medical center, and because they never had the money before.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I had somebody tell me on the reservation that they couldn't even put a sewer drain in from their house without getting the federal government approval.
Wow.
And when the tribe hired me first as an attorney for them, they had to have me wait, because if they were going to pay an attorney for anything, they had to get a letter signed approved by the Secretary of the Interior.
Wow.
And, I mean, it was that much in control that the federal government just kept right down their hands over Indians.
Yeah.
And so between the Gaming Act and I also pushed to get the Indian Civil Rights Act passed in the 70s, because, again, that gave, like, it was just like I had somebody come into the tribal court that they filed bankruptcy, but the bank said, "Too bad. Bankruptcy does not protect you because you're an Indian."
Wow.
And it didn't. Bankruptcy did not apply to Indian people on a reservation, and so they could still take the money from them even if they filed bankruptcy. And there were several other laws that did not apply to Indians.
Wow.
In fact, Indians were not citizens until 1923.
Yeah.
And so there's been a massive amount of changes since the early 70s.
So would you say that, like, we're very multicultural, like, and interracial, and, like, there's still some racism going on today with, like, police brutality and the Black Lives Matter movement, but would you say that we've moved on tremendously?
Oh, yes, it made a tremendous difference, because of the fact that we took a survey back in the 80s, or right around 1990, and only, I think, 25% of the adults had finished high school, and there was like a 90% of them were on, had alcohol and drug-related problems, and I don't remember what it was. I think 50% were on welfare because they couldn't read or write because there were no schools, that if they went to go to the public schools, they would kick the kids out, saying, well, your parents don't pay taxes, so we're not going to let you in here as a student.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that's why I was so happy we got our own school started now, where the kids can all read and write both in English and in the Ojibwe language.
Wow, that's good.
And so it made a tremendous difference now. And again, they did not have health care because of the fact they didn't qualify for Social Security, because they never worked during their life long enough to get Social Security benefits. And so it has made a world of difference lately.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so that's all the bragging that I'll do.
So right now we have 4 minutes left, just about. So what is one thing that you have on your bucket list that you still want to try to check off? Skydiving.
I pretty well am working with motivating the younger people to do things to make it better. And so I figure I've done my share.
Yeah.
And so I really don't have anything at all that I want to get involved in anymore. It's mostly to motivate the younger people to do things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think there's a single Indian in the state of Michigan that does not know who I am.
Probably in the Midwest, too.
A lot of them, yeah. I ran into some people in New Mexico one time when I was down there for a meeting. And they said, oh, yeah, you're Ron Douglas. I remember you giving a speech at U of M Law School. And they were from New York.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. So, like, you're also nationally known, too, and, like, you're talking about Kavanaugh when you, wow. It's like, everybody knows you, yeah.
Yep.
All right, so that concludes our interview with okay. Mr. Douglas.
All right.
All right.
So. I'll let you have this.